You're listening to Small and Mighty Conversations, a podcast celebrating and supporting the small business owner and creative entrepreneur. With your host, me, Sam Burgess. You're listening to Season 4, Episode 4. Hello everyone and welcome back to a brand new episode of Small and Mighty Conversations. Today I'm going to be chatting with Jacqueline Colley, an incredibly talented illustrator and pattern designer. Jacqueline and I talked about what it's like to be a product business, so a service and product business, about how changing the way you're working is imperative when you just know things aren't quite working out for you and what you can do to kind of make those changes. We also talk a lot about our love-hate relationship with Instagram and how we are both doers. And we want to know, are you a doer? Hashtag doers united. So listen to the episode, let me know. Don't forget to share on social where you are listening to the episode. We are in July now. Kids are breaking up. I don't have any, but I know that's still happening. So I would love to see where you're listening to the show. Don't forget to at me on Instagram, Sam Burgess UK. Tag me on stories and use the hashtag Small and Mighty Business or Small and Mighty Podcast. And don't forget to tell us, are you a doer? We're keen to know. Anyway, on with today's show. Hi, Jacqueline. Welcome to Small and Mighty Conversations.
Hi, Sam. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. And I'm really excited to talk to you today. So to kind of kick off, what I would love for you to do is to introduce yourself to the Small and Mighty Conversation listeners and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Okay, cool. So I'm Jacqueline Colley and I'm an illustrator and pattern designer and printmaker, and I make my living making sort of visuals, and yeah, that's about
it. In a nutshell. So tell us a little bit about how you got into that.
Okay, so I went to art college. I studied at Chelsea and I chose graphic design because I thought, oh, that's vocational, I'll get a job. And I graduated all the way back in 2008. And after sort of half a year being on the dole with most of my art school friends, I got on a graduate scheme with H&M and moved to Stockholm and learned all about print and pattern and graphics and t-shirts and, yeah, worked in-house for them for about a year. And then I spent the following sort of 5 years working in-house for different sort of high street companies and also suppliers, where you just sort of generate lots of print ideas and then they're sold into high street. So,
okay.
Yeah, that was my background. Yeah.
Well, that must have been really exciting. How did you get onto the H&M grad program?
It was a bit of luck, because basically I'd not chosen to do textile design at art school because I thought, oh, that sounds way too good. No one gets a job doing that. But I knew a girl who had gone on textile design, and she had gotten onto the graduate scheme and was helping a lot of people, letting people sort of send in their emails to her boss, who was sort of employing people through that scheme. So I was lucky in that. I suppose she'd already seen a lot of the textiles people, but she hadn't seen me because I was in a different department. And I had things like, it wasn't necessarily my graphics that got me the job. It was things like sketchbooks full of dinosaur drawings and more my kind of personal work, which had maybe not been that acceptable on my course, but was actually quite applicable to H&M and especially their kids wear department, which is where I ended up. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say dinosaur print, like that's got to be the kids department, surely.
Yeah. I love a dinosaur print. To be fair, I personally would.
There is nothing wrong with dinosaur prints on adult clothing, I'm afraid. Yeah. You know, why not? Why not? Embrace it. Yeah. So you worked for H&M, and then what, did you just go from H&M to going freelance? Like, what happened?
So I went freelance for a bit. Basically, I moved home.
Back to London, was that?
No, I come from Jersey in the Channel Islands. Yep. Yeah, so I moved home and then I sort of applied for working for a supplier, and I moved back to East London, where I'd lived before, and worked for a supplier there for a while. So yeah, I did freelance for a bit, but it didn't really work out for me. It wasn't right for me at the time. I don't think I was ready. I didn't have the confidence yet. And then I worked for a supplier for a while, and then I saw a job come up at Oasis, and I was really keen to work for them because they have a really strong print handwriting. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky I got the job there, and I was one of two print designers. So I basically designed sort of half their collection for a couple of years, mm-hmm. which was really good because we had a great creative director who was really into collaborating. Mm-hmm. And we worked with a lot of cool places like London Zoo and the V&A, and we worked with loads of amazing sort of vintage archives, and we would interpret those prints into kind of like new kind of modern ways for fashion and accessories and stuff. Yeah, so that was really cool. But after a couple of years, I felt sort of I felt like being in a big office just didn't feel like the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. So I handed in my notice.
Okay.
And yeah, scary. And then I went freelance with the idea of freelancing as a textile designer, but that's not really what happened.
Tell us what happened.
well, it's tricky because textile design is quite a kind of different beast where people expect a lot for very little money. Mm-hmm. So if you freelance in that, you have to generate constantly like so much different work. And also working as a textile designer, you work in a huge variety of styles and you have to be prepared to do a floral 1 minute and a geometric the next. And I suppose I'd left Oasis with an idea of developing my handwriting more and having more of my own kind of aesthetic, and really the fit for that is to be an illustrator. So then I've sort of been gradually, since going freelance, I've been gradually moving more into illustration, which led me to sort of create a range of products and as a way of getting my style out there and my work out there to try and sort of attract more commissions. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been a kind of, I've not ever had a clear idea of where I'm going. It's been, I'm trying to be more plan and think ahead now. Mm-hmm. But I've been more sort of reactive in how I've sort of developed my career.
Okay, and what kind of made you decide now's the time to be more proactive rather than reactive?
Partly it's to do with hindsight. Mm-hmm. And I think looking back, I feel like, oh, it would have been better if I'd planned, mm-hmm. to begin with. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think if I'd sat and planned, I'd have made the wrong plan anyway.
I know that feeling.
yeah. And it's through doing that we figure out our path. So it's definitely, but I think I've gotten to that point now where I have got a bunch of experience and I do have a clearer idea of where I want to go. Whereas in my, you know, 5 years ago, I didn't have a very clear plan. I just needed to try lots of things. So now I'm trying to plan because actually I'm at a point where that is really beneficial to me and much more an efficient use of my day-to-day time, mm-hmm. if I have a plan. So I'm trying to do like planning every month, every quarter, and just and try and plan for the year and do bigger goals as well.
I love that. I think, you know, you're absolutely right. I think it is a case, you know, I had a business plan when I first started my business. It's not worth the paper it's written on anymore because the business I have now is completely different to what I anticipated my business being or what I anticipated doing. And it is a case when you start a business, it's learning, it's making mistakes, it's trying different things, it's going off on tangents and then thinking,
exactly, yeah,
this is what I should be doing. And it's only with time and dipping your fingers into lots of different pies. That's not even the right saying, but dipping your fingers into pies. I love coming up with terrible sayings. That's when you kind of realize where you're most comfortable and also what challenges you and what challenges you're prepared to kind of take on going forward.
Yeah, and you sort of hone your gut instinct, don't you? And you have a better idea. Whereas before, if opportunities came up, I would just sort of try a bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And that was a good thing. But now I have a much clearer sense of what's right and what's wrong for me.
Mm-hmm. That is invaluable because you'll only know that through trial and error.
Yeah, totally.
So you say you've got a bit of a clearer direction on where your business is going to go. Would you like to share with us what that looks like for you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, clearer for me. Probably as clear as mud. So now I'm focusing... I suppose I'm splitting my time into sort of chunks. Mm-hmm. And I'd say like 50% of my time is spent being an illustrator, working on commissions. And then 50% of my time is looser. So it's more about developing personal work. It's about printmaking. And it's about doing things like planning and thinking about where I want to go and setting myself kind of goal and thinking about, oh, what kind of projects do I want to do, and sort of making those happen. And those things probably aren't paid projects. So it's about getting enough commissions to basically pay myself to have fun a lot of the time. Yep. With my work, which I'm not there yet, but that is the goal.
Amazing. And with your commissions, how do you go about getting those? Like, you have quite a large Instagram following. Does Instagram play a big part in people discovering you and commissioning you for work?
Yeah, I definitely think Instagram's a funny one, isn't it? Because I sort of got involved with it. I had an Instagram account quite early on because a friend told me to download it and didn't do anything with it.
Okay.
And then in 2015, I did my first, it was my first trade show with at Pulse, but with UAL. So we had a sort of trade, because I was a graduate, they have this kind of scheme where you can exhibit at trade show and get some guidance along the way.
Okay.
And one of the people, you probably know Patricia from the Design Trust. Yeah, she was one of the people who taught, and she was like, oh, you have to be using social media. And the concept of using social media for work was completely new to me. Mm-hmm. So I got on it and started using it deleted all my personal photos basically and started using it for work and sort of gradually got into it. And then I think suddenly I sort of started seeing the potential of it to get commissions, to get discovered, to get your work kind of seen in a really much easier way than the kind of traditional methods. So then I got really into it, and now I'm sort of want, like, the kind of heyday is maybe over, I don't know, but it's much harder now than it used to be to sort of get your work seen, and you have to like work harder at it. But I do really like it I see it now as a kind of visual scrapbook of things that are going on, and I love kind of creating the feed of it. So it's kind of a fun tool and definitely helps with getting commissioned, but I don't think it's maybe as good as it used to be in terms of getting art directors to see your work. But then again, I don't know, actually.
What makes you think that?
I don't know. Maybe it's that I mean, we all have a bit of a love-hate relationship with it, don't we? So sometimes I'm totally in love with it and sometimes I'm less so. But I suppose it's difficult because you can't help but compare yourself, and you see people who, like, I'm totally happy with my following amount, but you see illustrators with like 200,000 followers, and it's that is crackers to me. I can't imagine how you can even bring yourself to post anything on your feed if that many people are going to see it.
Big responsibility.
Big responsibility. But yeah, it's a funny one because it's been really good tool for illustrators and anyone visual. But it's a funny one. I can't quite get my head round. And it's a funny one as well, because it's kind of, in a way, it's devalued illustration, because now you're expected to kind of, I have a lot of people asking me to do work for Instagram, and I almost always say no, because it's, people want a lot of work for very little money, and then they want you to post it to your feed as well, so you're doing their marketing.
So brands asking you to create Instagram content.
Yeah, and then they want you to post it to your feed, so you're giving them your audience for the same price. Really kind of confusing time in that respect. But I love Instagram, and I'm trying to keep Instagram as a fun kind of reflection of my kind of ideas and what inspires me, as well as my work. And because I found that when I have done those sorts of more, I suppose it's influencer marketing, it just falls flat. Like, it just is, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good.
As in you being the influencer on behalf of the brands. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where, and I see it happen a lot, where brands or founder-led businesses who have strong Instagram profiles, building up an audience because people are invested in what they do, what they stand for, and then they get brands approaching them because they've got a big audience and are like, hey, you know, do you want to market our tea? And they're like, okay, because it's money, and they're like, sure, why not? And then their audience are like, huh, what's this?
Yeah,
I mean, that's totally the quickest way for me to unfollow somebody, is if I'm following them for one reason, that's because I love their brand, love them as a business owner, love what they're doing, love seeing behind the scenes of their business, really passionate about what they do, and then suddenly they're flogging tea, I'm like, and unfollow.
I totally agree,
because it's not in line with their brand, their values, their beliefs, or the whole reason I'm following them, which is why it falls flat. And I think, unfortunately, people just don't pick up on that. And it's like, I get asked all the time. So I get asked all the time by brands to promote stuff. And I'm like, no, because it's nothing to do with what my audience are following me for.
So I'm glad you said that, because I think there's so many... I suppose it's that thing of, you see what other people do and you think, oh, I should do that. And there's a lot of illustrators, you know, promoting things that are relevant to illustration, like tools and so on. But I don't want to spend my, you know, time doing that. Like, I just don't think that's a valuable use of my time. And there's all this pressure that comes with it for, like, these sort of, like, statistics and things. It's not what I signed up for.
It's not what you do for a living. You're not an influencer in terms of promoting other people's things. You have a business that you want to promote. That's the point of your Instagram account, is to promote your business and you as an illustrator. That's the whole purpose of your account, not to flog tea.
I think it's getting confused, and it's getting confusing, and then it's about, like, having that chat with yourself.
It's having a chat with yourself, and it's also, I think, marketing departments and businesses need to remember that there are certain pools of people that they should be going after to do the influencer marketing aspect, and those who have businesses. If you also want to be an influencer, then you need to be running two separate accounts, and that's that. Stop muddying the water, confusing your audience and turning people off, because that's essentially what happens. I'm obviously super passionate about Instagram, and I have much more of a love relationship with it than I do hate. I kind of feel we don't pay to use it, so we don't have any right to moan about the algorithm. I do think it's more challenging than it's been in the past, but that's because there are more than a billion users now, so you have to shout pretty damn loudly and have a very clear voice and offer in order to get people to follow you these days. You can't, you know, there is no, someone signs up to Instagram and therefore they're presented with like 20 accounts that are suggested to follow. And that's how a lot of influencers have grown so large, because they signed up when Instagram was quite new and they grew quite quickly. And then when anybody new signed up to Instagram, they were, hey, why don't you follow these 50 accounts, you know, to get you started. You don't get that anymore. So it is a bit harder these days. But I also don't think you should compare yourself to other people. I think everybody has their own place and everybody has their own lane. And those illustrators that have 200 plus followers, who knows if they're even making any money? Followers don't equal money.
And then I think the pressure comes, like, oh, well, maybe you turn your account into making money for you. But actually, that isn't what you have to do at all. But it's a funny one.
It is a funny
but one. I am definitely more, I'm changing the way I use it to make sure that I keep the love rather than the comparison and the hate, which is so easily like a trap you can fall into. I was reading a good thing and it was talking about, just get rid of all those hate follows, and I was like, I've done that, that's done.
Yeah, I think that's really important. It's really important that you keep it as a positive place. But I'm all very much of the mindset that, you know, if you're running an Instagram account for your business, then you have to treat it like work. And that means even if you don't like doing it tough, like, I don't like reconciling transactions on Xero, but you know what? I have to do it because it's part of running my business. And, you know, if somebody's like, I don't like Instagram, I'm like, tough. If you want your business to thrive and your audience is on Instagram, suck it up, sweetheart, because otherwise, you know, unfortunately, running a business isn't all sunshine and flowers and rainbows. There are loads of parts of businesses that we don't like doing. Like, I do not like reconciling transactions, but I'm too tight to pay for a bookkeeper. So that that's how we roll.
It's so funny because I love reconciling.
Really?
Oh my god. Yeah, it's so funny. Like it's so satisfying because it's like, oh, that's all going to be put into information for me that I can analyze.
Oh, yay. Gosh. Oh no. That is where we differ dramatically.
So definitely Instagram is more fun than Xero.
Oh yeah, definitely. Although I do like it when everything matches up in Xero. That does make me happy.
Oh yeah, that is satisfying. You
know, it's very satisfying. Like, everything's correct. You know, like woohoo, or it says there's 9p difference, and you're like, bloody hell!
Oh, no.
Now I've got to find that 9p. Anyways, tell me a little bit about the fact you develop your own products as well as part of your business. Where did that come from? Why did you decide to kind of, obviously you're what I would call a sproduct business, where you offer a service, but you also have products. You're a sproduct.
Oh, I love that. Sproduct. I didn't know I was a sproduct.
You're a sproduct. What made you decide to develop your own products and sell them?
Yeah, so that was definitely part of the sort of going freelance and having not enough clients and too much time on my hands and being it's tough when you first go freelance, isn't it? And your mind will explode if you spend all that free time thinking about how you have too much free time. So you have to sort of channel that energy. So I started what did I start with even? Oh, I started off with like lampshades and cushions that I was hand making with some digitally printed fabric, and it's just gone from there. And the great thing about starting to make products is then you can start doing pop-ups and markets, and then you start sort of meeting loads of people who are sort of in that same world, and also sort of people who are illustrators and making products, and it opens up a kind of whole new social world. Mm-hmm. So that just became a kind of habit of, okay, I don't have a job on at the minute, but I have this idea, so I'll just develop that. And then also it's become so easy to, I've always sort of had an online shop as part of my website, but now it's so easy to have an online shop. And I changed over a couple of years ago to Squarespace, where it's actually integrated into my website, which makes it even easier. So it's just kind of been a habit that was formed and that I've kind of kept on with. And I suppose also having worked in retail, essentially in fashion, and always making new products and things, it's funny because of a colleague of mine when I was leaving Oasis was like, oh, you're really gonna miss the product development side of things, and I was like, no, I won't.
And you did.
Good riddance. And then ironically I end up making products, so it's so funny, like you are kind of drawn back to the same things just in different ways. So yeah, I love that side of my business because it's where I get to kind of try ideas and then try those things out and post them to Instagram and see how people react, and it's a really interesting and different way of working. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just become a kind of habit, and I hate it when stuff sort of sells out and I'm like, oh, I need to think of something new to put in. Yeah,
I love that. I mean, the product side must be, because commissions, I imagine, obviously are very much led by the client in terms of what you're going to actually develop for them, because you're fulfilling a brief. While I guess with the product side, this is where you can kind of go to town with your creativity, because it's all about what you want to put out there. Obviously, you still have to think about the end consumer and what they would actually want to buy, but it's a case of you being able to really channel your creativity into something and have a tangible product at the end which will a consumer will purchase and have in their home, which must just be such a different mindset and process than when you are fulfilling a brief for a client.
Sure. I mean, yeah, they're totally different, but they actually like feed each other and are really kind of rewarding to each other, because what begins as a product in my shop that's completely personal work and just something that I an idea I wanted to develop, ends up being picked up. Like when clients get in touch with me, they almost always show me images of things in my shop and want versions of those things. So the shop leads to commissions, and then it's kind of a kind of virtuous circle of getting more work, basically.
Love
but
it.
it's definitely a different mindset and a different process. But it makes my commissioned work easier because they're looking at something that I've already made and I'm just doing a kind of version. So
yes. Tell me, what's been your most kind of, have you had like a pinch me moment or a kind of significant success to date?
Actually, kind of what we were just talking about, getting commissions based on my actual personal illustration work was a tipping point where I realized actually how I should be working and that the way I was working was working. So when I had a whole kind of Palm Springs range that I designed, and what did I make with it? I probably made some small kind of, I don't really do them anymore, but small toiletries bags.
Yeah.
What would you call that?
Yeah, like makeup bag type things. Wash bags.
Exactly, a makeup bag. And I think that was the only thing that got developed with it before Odeer picked it up and were like, we want to do a whole range with it. And that was a brilliant point because it was a company I really liked. They did a paper gang box with it, which is like a box that's posted to your home and you get, it's like a stationery subscription every month, and I love stationery. Stationery is like an addiction. So that was great because it was, I could take, we had one print already, and then and it's a really busy print that's really sort of full-on architectural print. And then I developed a kind of sister print that was much simpler, more spacious, with kind of tourist attractions on it.
Love it.
And then that was all developed into a range, and they gave me all the sort of specs of all the different items. And then I brainstormed how things would look and like pops of color. And that was a dream because it was taking a bit of personal work that I felt really excited by and then actually seeing it through into a commercial collection. And that was the beginnings of seeing, how I can take my ideas and, push them.
How exciting. And how did they find you? Did they find you on Instagram? You get quite a lot of press coverage as well. So was it through something like that?
Well, that was actually, I don't know what they call it, actually. They have a card competition.
Okay.
It's got a funny name. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, and I just designed some cards at the time. So I was designing them for myself to print and sell. And I just entered all of those. And I think they took one or two. And that was just the beginnings of a kind of relationship. And then I suppose they were following me and seeing what I was up to. So when I was sharing or work in progress, or this is a new pattern I've made, then they were like, oh, we really want that pattern, and can you do it in pink? Yes, I can. So that was, I used to enter quite a lot of competitions for brands that I like. I don't really do it anymore, but I do think it's worthwhile. Like I got a product in heels from doing a open call for heels, and so it's definitely worthwhile sometimes when you want to get noticed.
I think it's something that people really don't do enough of. Like I see it quite a lot. Like I saw obviously Liberty do them, like open call for products. They also do for patterns, and then I've seen like Toast have recently did one for knitwear, and it was like,
oh,
hello,
brilliant
knitwear designers.
Yeah.
They did one for homeware. I was like, you know, these are great opportunities, and I think a lot of people don't pay attention to them, or are too nervous and think, oh no, I'm not good enough. It's like, have some self-belief. Try it. You may never hear anything. You might not get it, but do it.
What's
do
the worst
it
that could happen? I did the Liberty one. It was so simple. It was just like hashtag your pattern. I didn't hear anything from it, but I thought, why not? You just have to do these things. Like, and the heels one was brilliant because a lot of them are quite age restrictive, which is fair enough, because if you're early on in your career, you know, you do need those step ups.
Yes.
But with the heels one, I think I was 30 when I entered that, and I was like, great, an open call that I can get involved in, because I just went freelance a bit later in my career.
But you've got to give these things a go. I was saying on my the last episode of season 3 with Elizabeth Stiles, we were saying, you know, if you don't try, you'll never know. So go out there and get your no. If you're so adamant that it's going to be a no, go and get your no. Go on.
Yeah. Yeah. And then work to turn the no into a yes.
Yeah, or be pleasantly surprised when it's not a no. But things like liberty, I've heard from people who, you know, weren't successful, but then have heard like 6 months later because their post was saved or a buyer happened to spot it or a buyer left and a new buyer came in and was like, what's this? Why was this missed? This is great. So you never know, like enter, you might not be right now, but you are getting the right people's eyeballs on your business. What more could you want, really?
Yeah. And that's the power of Instagram, like the way it's democratized everyone. And we're all just a kind of profile and a hashtag away from hopefully being clicked on. So that's why it is great.
You just never know who is looking and who is watching. And I think that is what is really, really important and really key, that people kind of think much bigger than the little community and the little pond they're in or the few thousand followers they have. Yeah. There are a lot of people out there and you could just have no idea. We don't know, you know, stories, we can obviously see who stalks us, and we all look. But you don't know who's looked at your profile. You don't know who's looked at some of your posts. And you also, you know, I know for a fact that lots of buyers and lots of, you know, quite important people in various industries are on there, but under pseudonyms. So you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
I got approached by Anthropology to run a workshop for them, Anthropology hadn't been watching my Instagram stories. A pseudonym had. So I didn't know.
Oh my God, yeah.
So you just don't know. And that's also what I always say to people as well, is you don't know who's watching. So be careful what you're putting out there and what you're putting up. You might think, oh yeah, well, it's only my friends and family and, you know, 1,000 Instagram followers. And, you know, they're probably just my customers and mates and stuff. But you don't know.
So think, and once it's online, it's there forever.
Yeah, you may think that stories expires after 24 hours, but screenshots last forever. So tell me, if you had one piece of advice for a future entrepreneur, perhaps somebody who is walking in a very similar career path to you, what advice would you have for them?
So I would advise probably a couple of things, but definitely to just try lots of different things and not be afraid to kind of just do stuff and just try stuff. And if it goes wrong and it doesn't work out, that's fine. Try something else. Like, I'm a big fan of this kind of ideas of multi-hyphenates and how we're not jacks of all trades. We're just exploring creativity in lots of different ways. And I think that's a really good thing to do. Like, that's why you end up with, you know, people on your podcast who are embroiderers and, you know, doing loads of different things, and there's so many different ways to do stuff. So I think it's good to sort of explore your creativity. And definitely, I know it's come up before, but just to do and not to think and overthink and just think until you kind of paralyze yourself, but just to kind of do. Like, it's like a writer's block. A lot of people suffer from it and they just want to kind of think about how they should do something over and over again. It's like, just don't think about it, just crack on with it.
Do first, think later.
It's so funny, when I remember the first time I shared my website, my online shop on Facebook. I'd had an online shop previously, but I think this was the first time I really like tried to put an online shop together. And my photography was awful. I didn't really like the website. There was so much stuff that I didn't like about it. And I shared it on Facebook. And then I had some people who are like really good graphic designers being like, that I'd sort of gone to college with, being like, oh, that's good that you sorted out your shop or whatever. And I was like so cripplingly embarrassed that they'd seen it and it wasn't right. But that it's better for it to be like done. What's that thing? Done and not perfect.
Yeah, done is better than perfect.
Yeah, because you can go back and you can take new photos and you'll have new products and you keep on, you know, you're always refreshing. Like, a website is never done. A project is never finished. It's, you know, you're always refreshing it. So it's better just to be out there, just start. Like, even if you're embarrassed by it, just like start.
I know so many people. There's one person that springs to my mind who I know has been working on her website and her business plan to launch her business for about 3 years and still hasn't launched. And it's like, just get on with it.
she sounds like she's crippled by she's built it up for so long now. She just needs to press the button.
Just do it.
And it's awful because the longer you spend, the more you expect it to pay off.
Yep.
But it's not going to pay off that much. Like every single action you take, like the longer you worry about it, the more kind of payoff you want there to be. But it's shocking how little payoff there is for most actions. Mm-hmm. Like even an amazing action, and you'll think, oh, this is such a great job, I'm going to get so much out of this. You'll be shocked. Like you won't get anything.
There are so many people that are like paralyzed over, I can't launch until I've got the perfect logo or discovered the perfect font or have the perfect brand name. Like, it's so important. And you're like, no, just pick a bloody font, pick a colour, pick a logo, pick a name and launch. And if it's a raging success, change it.
And if you don't like it later on, change it. Like, honestly, I'm so lazy. When I did my graphic design portfolio when I left uni, I bought a font for that, typed my name out in it, and I've just always used that. Yeah. And that's probably sounds terrible, but honestly, it's not broken, so I'm not going to fix it. Like, it's fine. Like, it does the job.
I only rebranded because my brand name didn't fit what my business was anymore. But I decided to launch my business, sat in a meeting at work and thought, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm going to launch a business. I went home that night, announced that I was going to quit my job, wrote a business plan over the weekend as to what I wanted to do, went in on the Monday, quit my job, and then realised I needed to actually do something. I had 4 weeks. So I was like, right, I need to incorporate my business. Okay, that means I need a name. What shall I call it? Came up with a name and then ran with it. And it's only kind of 3 years down the line that I was like, yeah, this name doesn't fit anymore. It's now time to rebrand.
Yeah, that's the right way to do it, because you're doing it, you're figuring out what it is, and then you rebrand.
Yeah.
And then your brand is a reflection of who and what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's the right way to do it. You've got to do first. Like, I'm not sitting in a meeting chatting about an idea.
Oh, God,
I want
no.
to see it.
That's why I didn't work very well in corporate offices. Let's have a meeting to plan what we're going to talk about in the meeting. And then we'll have a meeting about the actual meeting. And then we'll have a debrief meeting after the meeting, followed with some notes from the meeting. And then we'll put a list together of actions. But we'll have to have a meeting about those actions before we actually do any of the actions. And I'm just like, no, everyone just go back to your desk and get on with it. I'm a doer, and I think you have to be when you run your own business. You have to be a doer. You do have to have an element of planning, and you need to be strategic, and you need to have foresight, and you need to think about what it is long term that you want to do. But you can sit and you can write the most amazing business plan, but if you don't do it, it's not even worth the paper it is written on.
Totally agree.
Doers. Doers united.
Yeah.
And I know every single person listening to this podcast will be a doer, because you have to be a doer if you run a business. It's just, you are not a manana person, as I call them, you know, where everything gets put off till the next day. If I come up with an idea, I want to execute it there and then. Like, when I decided I want to run, like, start a podcast, I ordered a mic on Amazon within 30 seconds of deciding I wanted to start a podcast. Didn't know what I was going to talk about, didn't know what it was going to be called, but thought, I want to start a podcast, I think it's a good idea, I need a mic. Ordered a mic, bish bash bosh, here we are, you know, 250,000 downloads later. You know, it's just get on with it and stop procrastinating.
And I think that if you're feeling like, oh, I'll do that tomorrow, and you keep on putting something off, maybe it's not right.
Yes.
Like, maybe there's something in that, and it's your gut saying, actually, that's not the direction I want to go in, try something else. Because that worries me if I'm doing that with something, unless it's like a boring task.
Yes, same.
That I'm putting off. But if it's something that, then that might be a kind of communication from the gut saying, actually, that's not the right bit.
I think that's really important. Like, for me, I took a year off podcasting for a multitude of different reasons, personal and professional, but that was because every time I thought about it, I didn't want to do it, and I just thought, I don't want to do it, and I don't need to do it. It's not like it's a fundamental part of my business that makes me loads of money. It was something that just, every time I sort of thought, right, and everyone's like, when's the podcast coming back? Instead of being like, oh yeah, I'm really excited, I was like, oh, bloody podcast. And I just thought, just take a break, because I would rather put out the best version of something than nothing at all. And I am somebody who does struggle with the whole saying of done is better than perfect. I'm a doer for sure, but I like to do it to a really high standard. And there are some things that I'm happy that can just be done and not perfect, but there are some things that, as far as I'm concerned, have to be perfect or not done at all. And my podcast is one of them, because I'm very proud of it and I'm proud of the standard of it. And my heart wasn't in it last year. It just wasn't in it. And I would have probably lost all the followers and the listeners that I had gained, because it would have come across that there was no passion for it anymore. And then when I sort of woke up this year and was relaunching my business, I was excited about bringing the podcast back, and that enthusiasm has come across in season 3. So that, you know, there is a fine line where you have to kind of balance everything up, and it is like a set of scales, but the majority of things in business, just get on with it. But then there are some things that you should really take your time over, because, you know, nobody wants something done half-assed.
Yeah, definitely.
So, final question for you. Whose story would you like to hear on Small and Mighty Conversations?
Oh, so this is, I definitely would like to hear our mutual friend, which is Hannah from She Is Fierce magazine.
Oh, I love
Hannah. And The Collective. Yeah. And she has such a great story as well. And she's so good at championing other people's stories. And I would love to hear her story, because I know she's like, everything, the concept behind her magazine is her inspiration from her daughter and all of these things. So I think her story would be great to hear.
I would love to have Hannah on. I think she would be fabulous. Thank you so much for that recommendation. I will pop all the links to your social media, your website, and of course Hannah as well, in the show notes, so people can come find you. But that's everything. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, it's been so nice to chat with you, Sam. It's been lovely. Very surreal to be on the podcast, but great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Wasn't Jacqueline a fabulous guest? I thoroughly enjoyed my chat with her, and I'm excited. I'm still excited to know if you're a doer. So don't forget to let me know on social if you are indeed, are you a manana person, or are you team doers? Really keen to know. That is everything for this week. I wanted to let you know about my power hours. If you're not familiar with them, I'm offering 1 hour video mentoring calls. There are limited times available. You can book via the show links or on my website, and you just book online and you get 60 minutes of my time. Any type of business is welcome, service and product. Ask me anything business or marketing related. I'm really keen to help as many people as possible, and it's a great way to perhaps just get some ideas and get some clarity around certain things. Maybe you need some help with some actions over the summer. Perhaps there are some things on your to-do list and you're not quite sure how to prioritize them. Perhaps you want someone to just do a quick Instagram audit for you. Maybe you want someone to have a quick whiz through your website with you and let you know their initial thoughts. Perhaps you've got some copy that needs reading, or anything really. There is a wealth of different things you can ask me and you can learn more. So don't forget to have a look in the show notes, click the link and have a read. And like I say, there are limited times available over the summer for you to book in for a 1 hour call with me. But as always, thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please, if you're listening on iTunes, hop on over and give it a rating and a review. It means an awful lot, especially with the rise of so many podcasts now. It's harder and harder for us to stand out. And it is, you know, obviously something completely free that I offer you guys. So if you wouldn't mind taking 2 minutes to go and rate and review, it would mean so much to me, because it just really helps spread the word. But until next time, keep pushing forward. Your next great success is just around the corner.